Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. Here today with the last of the season preview podcasts. Going to be covering the Dallas Mavericks. And in order to cover the Dallas Mavericks, I'm joined by a man who's just got home from getting his very first Panther tattoo. It's Jordan Lloyd. Jordan, how are you going?
Well, thanks, Josh. And yes, it's stinging a touch, but doesn't hurt as much as the hairline removal that I've had to install as well.
Anytime you can get close to looking like Darren Williams, it's a good move and it's always a positive one. How big's the Panther tattoo? The whole back?
I've got a couple of them. Bicep. I've also had Darren tattooed as actual Darren instead of Darren.
Yeah, of course. That's the way you have to do it. I think that anyone should try to emulate the style that Darren Williams brings, and that brings me to the Dallas Mavericks. Actually, you know what? Before we get to the Dallas Mavericks, if anyone wants to follow you on Twitter, where can they find you? If you're still there, looks like he's dropped right out. All right. Now, Jordan, what I was saying before you dropped out there, if anyone wants to follow you on Twitter, where can they find you?
It's @Mad_Rooter.
Of course it is. So go ahead and follow Jordan on Twitter @Mad_Rooter. Now, we've covered all 29 other NBA teams. We're obviously at the last one now, which is the Dallas Mavericks. They are your team, Jordan. How do you think they fared this offseason? Wasn't the greatest, I think it's fair to say. How bad did they get? Are they a team that is still fighting for the playoffs? Are they in full, let's get ourselves a draft pick? Are they in danger of losing their draft pick to the Celtics? How do you think their offseason went?
No, I think that, the offseason was poor. But I still think they're fighting for the playoffs. Obviously, missing out on DeAndre was probably the reason for a lot of the negativity. But to be fair, losing Rondo is probably an addition by subtraction. Getting in Wes Matthews is, hopefully it'll turn out to be good. But obviously losing Monte in the two guard spots a loss as well. They're probably taking a step back from last year, I would say, but still, I still think they'll be competing for a spot.
Well, they won 50 games last year, over 50 games last year. I don't think that's going to be their goal this year, but the eighth spot, you're not going to need 50 games to get in there. Like, it's probably going to be between Utah, Phoenix, Dallas, and those teams aren't going to be pushing for 50 games. They're going to be looking at around that 40-42 range, which is within grasp. Now, we talked about them missing out on DeAndre Jordan. We know about that whole issue and that whole scandal, but there was a number of players that came and went from this team. So the guys that they added, we already touched on Darren Williams, your hero. Sam Dellenbaugh's back for a second go-around. Zaza Pachulia came across in a trade with the Bucks. JaVale McGee's in there just to increase the comedy value. Yeah. Wes Matthews, John Jenkins, and Jeremy Evans all came across. Who's the most impactful there? Do you think it's going to be Darren? Is it Wes Matthews? Who's the biggest addition they made?
The biggest is Wes Matthews, but obviously the question mark over his head is recovery from the Achilles injury, which seems to be a bit of an old man injury. So I don't think there's too much history of younger guys getting that injury and coming back from it. But the older guys who get it don't seem to come back as well. But he's the biggest addition if he turns out to be healthy. So I heard Mark Cuban interviewed the other day saying that they backed their medical team and that's why they've signed him. And they did a similar thing with Tyson Chandler back when they signed him after he had problems with his feet, and that's turned out to be the correct decision. So you've got to back the guys there that are paying the big bucks to get these guys in. So, I expect him to make impact. Hopefully he gets back for close to the start of the season. Not Christmas, this was thrown around.
That's the thing. We don't really know when he's coming back, but it's a long-term deal. He's not signed to make an impact from day one necessarily. If he's there, great. If he's not, then, yeah. He's got another 4 years with the team to make an impact. But I think the point that you made there is pretty key, that we don't have much of an idea how these Achilles injuries affect NBA players in younger players. Now, we're going to have two test examples this year. Brandon Jennings is going to be one. Wes Matthews is going to be the other one. Anderson Varejao, not really a younger player, but most of the other guys have suffered.
He's a top player as well.
Yeah, completely different. Even Wes Matthews and Brandon Jennings are very different players as well. But we don't know how it's going to affect these young guys. The thing that I'm worried about is that he only did it in March. It's not that long ago. And to think that he's going to be back and ready to go from opening night, it scares me considerably. I don't know what to make of the reports. We heard the one, he's coming back at Christmas. Then we heard, no, Rick Carlisle coming out and saying whoever said that was an idiot. But we don't really know what to make of it. Wes seems to think he'll be back for opening night, but I don't think he will be.
So, yeah, well, I agree. I don't think he'll be back for opening night. Rick Carlisle was hosing down suggestions that it would take as long as Christmas. So he was sort of indicating he'd be back before that.
Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, even that seems, you just don't know.
It seems quick. It seems Christmas is 9 months, and that still seems relatively quick for an injury which is, at these days, it's as impactful as an ACL injury, or if not more so. And it's a worry. So in terms of fantasy leagues, I don't really want anything to do with Wes Matthews this year because we don't know. We've got no idea at this point when he's going to be back. He could miss the first 2 months. He could miss the first month and a half, but then be going at half pace for the next 6 weeks. He could be a different player for the first 4 months of the season. We've got no idea what he's going to be. And to draft him at the moment, his ADP is 56, and I want no part of him at that sort of spot. No, it's,
you can't take him that high.
You can take him in the last pick and maybe put him in your IR spot, and yeah, any or your last two or three picks maybe, but no chance you want to go inside the top 60.
I agree. I think the last two or three picks you'd fit all right because you tend to rotate and stream those guys anyway. So you take him two or three, stick him on IR, and then see what becomes of it when he comes back. There's no way you would take him at pick 56.
No, and look, pick 56 is what he would give you if he was the Wes Matthews from Portland and he was doing what he did in Portland, but we don't know how he's going to return. We don't know when he's going to return. We don't know how much he's going to play. You can't rely on that sort of stuff. The other guys, they brought in a number of guys, and there's a number of players who are going to have an impact this year. Darren Williams is going to be the starting point guard. I think he's going to be a really interesting guy for this team. We heard so many stories about, look, let's be honest, he's a shit bloke, basically, from everything we've heard. I haven't heard one person come out and have one good thing to say about him as a person. His basketball has obviously suffered as well, but maybe this is some sort of motivation for him to get going again and turn back some sort of form. He had some really good stretches last year. He had some really poor stretches. He's possibly an upgrade over Rondo. How do you see him, you know, back in his home state? How do you see this addition of Williams?
As much as I dislike him as a player, I actually think he's going to be really good.
Yeah, so do I.
You know, I think, yeah, he's gone through a lot of things over the last couple of years where he's been up and down. As you said, there have been reports about his attitude and how good of a bloke he is. But his strength is pick and roll. When he played that with Boozer in Utah, they were really good. There was talk that he was a better point guard than Chris Paul at the time. That's a couple of years ago now, obviously, but getting into the system that Dallas run with a lot of these sort of fluid pick and rolls that aren't really design sets, they're just the way smart basketball players operate. Having Dirk around him, having really smart pick and roll operators with him, I reckon it'll suit him. I think he'll do quite well. It wouldn't surprise me that he has a better season than any of them he's had in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked at all. Now, he was a legit 20-10 guy in Utah. Like, he was a 20-point, 10-assist guy, and he did that for one or two seasons. And not many players do that. We could probably count on one hand the amount of guys who've done that last 5 years, and the name is Chris Paul, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
He did that for a couple of years back in Utah. He was a long way from removed from that. We know he's not that guy now, but he's getting drafted pretty late. His average draft position is 82, and I think that's a significant steal with upside to become a top 50 guy. He probably won't be a top 50 guy, but I think that you clearly get better than top 80 value out of him there. He was mucked around a lot by Lionel Hollins last year. He sat on the bench behind Jarrett Jack, and no matter how bad you think Darren Williams is, he's better than Jarrett Jack. I don't care what anyone says. He's a better player than Jarrett Jack. You can't find 7 assists in the 80s in drafts normally. He'll give you that. He'll hit threes. He gets a steal. He's a good free throw shooter. I think he's going to end in it. And I'm like you. I can't stand the guy. He is up there. He's top 5 in most punchable heads in the NBA to me. And I've got him on about 3 of my teams already because I think it's in significant value with tremendous upside. And he could go wrong, but I would be shocked if it went really wrong.
Yeah. The thing that I think Dallas would be at the moment regretting, I know it's only a small move, but giving away Brandon Wright in that Rondo trade, He would have been great as a backup center to spend some time with Deron, just diving to the rim.
Oh, he'd be very good with that sort of setup with Williams. He would have been fantastic. Look, they don't have a real center now. They've got Zaza Pachulia, who is good for certain things that he does, but he's not a defensive guy.
Clearly. Oh, Zaza, but yeah, so do I.
But Zaza's a guy that you can run the ball through. He can pass. He's a pretty good defender in terms of playing passing lanes and getting steals. But he's not a rim protector. Brandon Wright's a good pick and roll gun. I reckon he would have been a great guy to have there. But obviously they rolled the dice on Rondo, and it didn't really work out at all for them. But sometimes you have to make those moves. Some of them work, some of them don't. What do you think, yeah, Do you think Zaza as a guy who's going to have value for fantasy leagues with those last couple of picks?
Not really. there's three centers there, and to be honest, JaVale and Dallenberg might actually suit Dallas better than Zaza does. So I'm not sure that he gets huge minutes, even if he's the starter, to put up big numbers. He's a good player, but I don't know if he's fantasy relevant this year. He helps their spacing, of course, but then does he help their defense? Maybe Dallas just throw defense out the window this year. I don't know.
Yeah, there's not a lot of defenders on this team. You know, Wes Matthews is probably their best defender, and we don't know what he's going to be like. And the Achilles might actually hamper him more in his defensive play than what it does in his ability to shoot. So, yeah, their defense is going to struggle with it. Deron Williams, Wes Matthews, Chandler Parsons, Dirk Nowitzki. That's 1 through 4. There's a few turnstiles there.
Deron's all right.
Yeah, but he's not a great... Look, if you're asking him to shut down... Yeah, look, Westbrook will torch him. Steph Curry will destroy him. But they destroy most players, but he has to be able to slow them a bit. And he doesn't have that other guy who can switch on. Like, Wes Matthews could potentially have switched onto those guys and shut them down. And Deron could have taken a little bit of time off on the defensive end to take a shooting guard. He's not going to have that sort of luxury at this point with what we know with Wes Matthews, the guy whose name just completely escaped me. With Zaza, I think that he gets majority of the minutes. JaVale McGee is still injured. He said he still can't actually jump high. I think the quote was he can't jump extremely high still. He's still not allowed to do that, which is a worry considering it's been about 2 years since he had the first leg injury and has barely played since. I think he'll struggle to get any sort of minutes, let alone with the way that Rick Carlisle will respond to any sort of buffoonery. Carlisle's already called out Sam Dallenberg for being fat. Not a good sign.
Yeah.
Dallenberg was there, 2 years ago? And had issues with Carlisle then, and they brought him back. I don't imagine Carlisle's too pleased with that.
Well, it's an interesting one, and it talks a little bit about what happened with Rondo as well. That the executive made decisions to bring Rondo in against Carlisle's wishes, and it didn't go well. And as you've said, he's had issues with Dallenberg in the past, but they've decided to bring him back again. So I don't know. You can read into that a couple of things, that obviously they don't care what Carlisle thinks. He's there to coach, not to make personnel decisions. Or that maybe Rick doesn't think it's such an issue and they can move on from it.
It's just interesting to me that he came out straight away and already called out Dallenberg for being fat and out of shape about a week into, not even a week, about 2 days into training camp.
Yeah, he probably is though, so it's pretty obvious.
That's true. The other two guys they brought in, the names that might not mean a lot to some people, Jeremy Evans and John Jenkins, they're guys who on... per minute basis, put up really good numbers. Like Jeremy Evans is a guy who, on a per 36 basis, he can be a double-double guy. He can get blocks. He shoots really good percentages, but he's never had an opportunity. Same with John Jenkins, who came across from Atlanta. The thing with Jenkins, I know Mark Roberts is a massive fan of John Jenkins and thinks that he is going to get the bulk of the minutes at shooting guard while Wes Matthews is out. I'm not so sure, but his numbers that he puts up are really impressive. He's a good three-point shooter. He shot 40% from three last year. He could, if he gets 30 minutes, he could hit 2 threes a game and score and provide a little bit of defense. What do you think of those sort of under-the-radar moves? Like, I really like Evans. What do you think of Evans and Jenkins?
I like Evans. I like Evans as well. Jenkins, I don't know too much about, but I disagree a little bit with Mark suggesting he'll get the bulk of the minutes. I think that'll go to Devin Harris, who they've had a love affair with ever since they first had him. And Devin, for me, he's always looks like he should do better than he does. He never really puts up fantasy relevant stats, but always seems to be contributing when he's on the floor. So I think he'll get the minutes, and then I'll have Barea as the third guard off the bench. Whether that means Jenkins will get some time or not, I'm not sure, but I disagree that you'll get the bulk of the minutes with Wes out.
I think Devin Harris is probably is the best choice to get the minutes there. The thing is, Harris, he'll go out and he'll have like a really big game and he'll get 20 points and hit three threes and five assists and you go, that's great. And then the next three games are just garbage and you go, like, what's going on with this guy? But he's going to have an opportunity now.
Yeah, the other thing is he's very hard. Consistency is one thing, but consistency in stats as well. So some games he'll have 6-7 assists and then the next game he'll have one, but he'll have 3 3-pointers.
Yep.
So you don't actually know what you're getting from him. You get he's a guard, but that doesn't really help you in fantasy. He's inconsistent in terms of contributions in total, but more so in the individual categories, I think.
Yeah, so you don't know when you're going to, if you add him, is he going to give you the threes today? Is he going to give you more points?
Exactly.
Is he going to give you assists? What's he going to give? He's been sort of an enigma.
What are you adding him for? Because he's not good enough to add as a just a good player. You're adding him because you want a specific advantage or you want to count a couple of categories. And I don't think you can rely on him to do that.
And last year there was obviously opportunities with Rondo, who Rondo had injuries and then he had the falling out. When they would put Barea in, they'd start Ray Felton and Harris would not necessarily get, like, that seemed like they'd always want to cap Harris that you're playing 25 minutes no matter what the situation is. No matter who's out, no matter who's around, we'll slot JJ Barea and he'll get 30 minutes over you. But if Rondo's back, then you'll still get the same minutes. And it's just like they want him in that six-man role pretty consistently. He will probably get a boost if Matthews is out. But the other guy who's going to get a boost in that sort of situation is rookie Justin Anderson, who he dominated the last part of Summer League. He looked fantastic. He is a massive guy. He's going to provide some defensive abilities as well, which I think gives him somewhat, not of an advantage. Devin Harris is a pretty small, slender guy. Justin Anderson is monstrous. He's 6'6". He's big. He's strong. He's been in college for 3 years. I think he's going to be a decent defender, and he's a really good three-point shooter as well. So he's a guy, any of these guys, they're not going to have value season long, whether it's Jenkins, whether it's Anderson, whether it's Devin Harris. But if we see Matthews out for the first month of the season, grabbing these guys with a last pick, if you determine that one of them is going to get 30 minutes or 28 minutes, you grab them at the start, and then after a month, you can cut them. It'd be the same as adding a hot player off a waiver wire. So you've got to take that into your consideration as well. What's your thoughts on Anderson? He was a late pick. Have you seen much from him?
I haven't seen a lot, but Carlisle's history with rookies isn't great.
That's true.
So Shane Larkin, I think, was probably the last rookie that got any sort of playing time. And I thought watching it, he was underutilized. He showed a bit from mine and really got sporadic minutes and then would go missing for games at a time. I wouldn't put any faith at the moment in any rookies at Dallas just because I don't think Carlisle trusts them until they've earned their stripes, so to speak.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough because you're right. Shane Larkin barely saw the court at all. He'd play a couple of good games and then he'd barely see. And look, they just haven't had many rookies really at all, though, either. They're not a team that really values their draft picks.
That's right. Exactly. And I think the coach is part of that.
Yeah, I'd say that's a huge part because he just doesn't play. And look, they've had... the draft rights, the Kelly Olynyk and Dennis Schroeder, two guys who I reckon would be pretty handy for them right about now, but they've traded them on to try and get other sort of talent. The guys that they lost, Monte Ellis, you've touched on, Tyson Chandler's gone as well. They're two pretty big losses. Rajon Rondo, not necessarily a big loss considering what he brought to the team, especially what he brought in a negative sense. El-Farouq Aminu's gone to Portland. I'm a big Aminu fan. I don't know how he was necessarily going to fit with this team because he didn't really fit what they needed. And then Amare Stoudemire and Richard Jefferson have also gone, but it's good to get a little bit of that dead weight out. Charlie Villanueva is still there, potentially stealing minutes off people who are actual basketball players. But none of those sort of secondary guys are too important. They didn't lose young, developing players, really. And Chandler and Monte, they're losses, but it was calculated in terms of what the Mavericks were doing. Going after DeAndre Jordan didn't work out, but again, you swing for the fences. Sometimes you hit, sometimes you don't.
Yeah, I used to love taking Tyson Chandler really late. I think you could always get him sort of around 100 and he'd always give you really high field goal percentage, good blocks, good boards, 10 points. And he was just a lock at that 100 sort of draft position. But obviously he's moved on now, so...
Yeah, there's not many of those guys like Chandler.
I don't think they get those same stats from... The rest of the centers on the roster.
No, Pachulia is not going to be able to grab 10 boards. He's not going to block 1.5 shots. He's not going to shoot 65% from the field. And that's what Chandler's massive advantage was, is at that stage in the draft, to find someone who could hit field goals at a high clip with a high volume, yep. there was no one. And you grabbed him then. If you had grabbed a few poor shooters early on, you could add Chandler and it bumps your field goal percentage up by 2-3% and gets you back into consideration for competing for that category. In terms of the young players on this thing, we've talked about Justin Anderson as well. Satnam Singh, the big Indian, picked in the second round this season. He is a gigantic man. He's an interesting player to me because of the lack of talent at centre. I don't think he's going to be able to do much, but he might get more minutes than we anticipate because McGee might not be healthy. Dallin Bear might fall completely out of favour. Satnam Singh, he's not going to be looking at him in any sort of standard leagues. It has to be really deep or a dynasty sort of format, and you have to go pretty deep in that sort of thing to look out for him. But he's a name to keep an eye on just because of his height, basically.
Yeah, definitely wouldn't look at him in standard leagues, and I don't even think it's worthwhile talking about him for those sort of leagues. But dynasties, we did a dynasty league with 170-odd players or so. Yeah. He didn't get a look in that. So maybe you have to get real deep in those sort of 30-team leagues that people are doing for him to have any consideration, I would have thought.
If you want to go real deep, Maurice Ndua was a guy who was fantastic for the Knicks in summer league, and the Mavericks signed him. He's another big guy, really aggressive rebounder, shot blocker. That's pretty deep, though, so I wouldn't be putting a huge amount of stock in him. But a guy that I do like is a player who came across in the Rajon Rondo trade, Dwight Powell, the Canadian who from Cleveland and Boston. I really like Dwight Powell. He's a guy that is someone to keep an eye on if something happens to Dirk. Because if something happens to Dirk, who else have they got to play that position? Who else? Who replaces Dirk if he gets injured?
No one.
there's no one. It's going to have to be Powell. And Powell, as stupid as this sounds, his game is a little bit like Dirk. He's not a banger. He's not a big rebounder. But he's a guy who has got a pretty decent long-range shot. He was very, very three-happy at summer league. I think he hit over 2 threes a game as a power forward, which is pretty good. Decent score. Not a bad rebounder. An okay sort of defensive steals and blocks guy. Not great numbers, but he's very similar to what Dirk does. So he's clearly not Dirk. But if Dirk was to go down, he could sort of provide a 30% facsimile of what Dirk does in the offense without disrupting it too much. But he's not going to disrupt it. But if he plays 30 minutes, he's going to hit a 3, a 3.5 a game. He's going to get 14 points. He's going to get 6 or 7 rebounds. So, yeah, Dirk is getting up there, and we'll talk about him in a little bit, but he struggled down the stretch. He struggled a lot in Eurobasket for Germany. The end for him could be coming quicker than I think some people do think. Powell's a guy to keep an eye on.
Interesting with Dirk. He's always looked terrible at the start of seasons.
He does struggle. He looks like he's so unfit.
So long to get into it. So, you know, well, you can look at it two ways. If someone's got him and they want to get rid of him, you're getting cheap. But then, your point's a good one. He did struggle really badly in Euro basketball, playing for Germany. And I think historically he's got up for those sort of things. He's actually been all right. But his game relies on no athleticism or movement. It's just shooting. Like if you even go back to the 2011 finals, he'd get the ball in the post and somehow manage to drive the basket or hit a fadeaway and then couldn't get back on the other end. He looked like he was walking on two walking sticks, basically. He could hardly bend his knees. So, you know, he might be the guy that can actually, I guess, lift when need be, but it's concerning he didn't do it for Germany.
Yeah, he always looks slow. Even watching him take it in the post and try and spin around guys, it's like it's in slow motion. You go, like, how are these shots? Like, how are they going in? How is this guy finding position? He's that good.
It's always looked like that, though.
Yeah, he has. And that's what I mean. Like, he can do this for the last 5 years, and you go, like, how is this happening? Like, this guy looks slow. He can't jump. He can't jump. Like, we talk about guys like Zach Randolph not being able to jump. Like, Dirk can't jump. Like, he's like 1 foot planted to the ground at all times. He can't move, but he can still hit shots. The problem with him now is that the comment that came out maybe last week that they're going to limit him to 26 minutes a night. What does that do for the Mavericks? It doesn't help the Mavericks, I don't think. What does it do for his fantasy value? He's got a ridiculously high ADP, average draft position of 41. You don't want anything to do with Dirk at 41, do you?
Sort of do. Okay. It's a soft spot. You know what you're getting from Dirk. They said, look, last year they limited him. They didn't put a strict limit on like they have said this year, but they also said that he wanted him scoring 20 points a game. You know, they're doing these things to preserve his length of his career. I don't know. I don't know if he'll stick, to be honest with you. I think he'll get out there and he'll start playing well, and he'll play more than 26 minutes a game. As I said, he's always a slow starter. I think they'll might stick with that at the start, but then it'll go. 41's a bit of a risk, but I like him.
He is a slow starter. Look, there's no doubt that he is a guy that can have just a horrendous 2 months, and then once it clicks into January, the weather gets colder over there, he just starts, I don't know, the arthritis, it's reverse arthritis for him. He kicks it off, it just starts becoming Dirk of old, and he's done that for about the last three seasons when he's really, really struggled early on. He goes, is this the end? And then he kicks it up a gear.
The other thing is, if you look at his shooting style, when he shoots his threes and things like that, he hardly jumps, so it's not like he's losing power from his legs. So if he's struggling in the post, he might just move out further and take more long-range jumpers, move away from the banging down there, move away from any sort of dribble-drive game.
Yeah, look, his three-point percentage hasn't changed, really. Look, his three-point percentage the last five seasons, 39, 37, 41, 40, 38. Like, they're all really good numbers.
Yep. And if they start running pick and rolls, you know, with Parsons and Deron getting in that way, maybe Dirk just sits out at the three-point line and bombs away, and he'll hit heaps of them, and they have to put someone out on him.
You have to respect him as a shooter. He's one of the greatest shooters of all time, the best big man shooter of all time, unless you count Larry Bird in that same class, where he's a bigger guy than Bird, the best seven-foot shooter of all time, definitely.
Yeah.
Who do you think's a breakout candidate on this team? Who do you think's in line for a career season?
No one.
Yep, that's fair enough.
There's not one player on the team you look at who you say is definitely going to have a better year than they've ever had before.
Yep.
Other than guys who are inconsequential.
Yep. The guy that I had down for this, and there's a massive asterisk in front of it, is Chandler Parsons, because we don't know. Again, like Wes Matthews, I'm less concerned about Parsons, but I am still concerned with his knee and this odd abacus micro fracture knee surgery that he had, that, again, we don't really know anything about it. We don't know. We just only heard what the procedure was last week. We hear that he might be ready for opening night, but he also might miss the first 2 weeks. We don't really know at this point. He struggled mightily early on in Dallas, but he ramped it up in the second half, and he was really good. He was a top 50 player for fantasy in that second half of the season. We're hearing talk coming out of him playing some point guard this year, which is as dumb as it sounds. His last two seasons in Houston, he averaged 3.5 and 4 assists a game. So he can handle the ball. He can distribute. Without Monte there, they need a second ball handler. Like, Monte was the second ball handler. They need a second ball handler. So if Parsons goes out there and gives you 3.5 to 4 assists, and then goes out and becomes the primary scorer, which, again, Monte was that, and he's not going to be there. We don't know what Matthews is going to be. Williams, more of a distributor probably than a scorer. Dirk, they're not going to rely on him and pound it into him every possession. Parsons could be the guy who leads his team in scoring. He could hit 2 threes a game. He could get you 4 assists a game. I think that he is a guy that, assuming that the knee is okay, he could be in line for a breakout season. And also, he is in a situation where he's got a player option on his contract. So he could decline that. Salary cap going up, he could put up a massive year and go, okay, well, where's my 20 million? I want 20 million this season because look what I just did leading this team. And if he happens to lead this team, which he could be the guy that leads them and pushes them into the playoffs, I think there's a chance there. But I am really scared about the knee injury.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Parsons fan. It's probably a bit of a holdover, more so for real basketball than fantasy. You know, he's got a max or close to max deal. It's really one of those fake max deals where it's a positional scarcity and everyone knew the salary cap was going to explode, so they've locked him away. He's a good, solid basketball player. I don't see him getting dramatically better than he was last year. I think he would give him more responsibility than he was last year, but that probably decreases his field goal percentage. Dirk gets a little bit less potent, so more attention goes to him. No Monte, so more attention goes on him. Probably increases his counting stats, but percentage probably struggles. So wouldn't surprise me to see him do slightly better, but I wouldn't be putting him in as a breakout, I don't think.
He's a guy that is probably, I'm going to say underrated, and it's probably the wrong word, but if you're a team that is punting free throw percentage, he's got a pretty bad free throw percentage for a small forward. It's only about 73%, which is not horrible. It's not 38%. It's not Andre Drummond. But if all your guys average 73 on your team, you're not winning free throw percentage. So he's a guy that whose value is definitely not inflated by a high volume, high free throw percentage sort of number. So if you're in that situation looking for a forward around that fifth or sixth round, I think he's got some okay value at that point. What about a sleeper player? Who's a guy that you think, based on the draft position, could be someone we've already spoken about? Who do you think is the biggest sleeper on this team?
Probably Deron.
Yep, that's who I've got as well.
His draft position is 82.
Yep.
I'd much rather take him above Wes Matthews.
Absolutely.
So 82 versus 56. I would take Deron above him. I just get a bit more certainty as to his health situation. He's probably the one sleeper. Otherwise, maybe Zaza.
Yeah, well, he's going to pick 143. That's the last pick. I think he's got more value than the last pick in the draft. I'd be happy taking him in round 11, probably.
Yeah, I think that's maybe right. Yeah. So as opposed to either last pick or a waiver wire, I think you'd get him round two before the end.
Who's someone you think that the other way overvalued? Touched on mine already, Dirk at 41. I don't want anything to do with it. Is there someone who you think is overvalued heading into drafts?
Looking at these average draft positions, I would have said Chandler Parsons, but he's at 74, so not really. Dirk, look, in all honesty, Dirk probably is, but I think everyone loves him, so take him at 41 and enjoy it. Devin Harris has got an average draft position of 120. I can't really. I think if you're taking him. Oh, no, it's not that. No, that's his rank, right over ranking. I think that's overvalued. I think he's a waiver wire type guy.
Yep, that's fair enough. I don't think his upside is high enough to justify picking in the last couple of rounds, even if he might rank at 130 or 120. Normally, with those last couple of picks, I want to go with a guy who's going to jump into the top 100 or top 90, and I don't think Devin Harris has got that. You might pick him at pick 130. By the end of the season, he's ranked 127.
Last year, you could get Rudy Gobert off the waiver wire at the start of the season.
Oh, there are lots of guys. Hassan Whiteside clearly was one of those guys because he wasn't in the league.
So I think there's guys like that are going to do well that you get on the waiver wire, and Devin Harris isn't one of them.
There'll be 40 guys that start the season generally undrafted that end up on majority of teams. That's generally how it is. Generally two-thirds of the guys that you draft end up on a team, and the other third gets cycled in and out for whoever else comes in. There'll be plenty of guys. There'll be guys that we've never heard of that jump in. There might be one of those guys that people will go, who's this player? Chandler Parsons was that guy in his rookie season.
No one knew who
Chandler Parsons was. Wes Matthews was an undrafted player as well. Yeah, all these guys, no one knew who they were when they first started.
Devin Harris isn't one of those guys, though.
No. Look, we know who Devin Harris is at this point. If you're in a deeper league and you're picking him at pick 130, what was that?
We know who he is, and I don't think he's a 130th best player.
No, that's fair enough. But if you're in a deeper league, say you're in a league where you're drafting 200 players, at pick 130, you're not necessarily going for as much upside. It's equivalent to picking someone who at 60 or 70 in a standard league where you want steady.
I still have a same issue with him that I went through before. I don't actually know what I'm getting from him.
Yeah, that's all true as well. What about a guy who you think is who's limited by their playing time? So if they're looking for a perfect situation, say an injury occurs, who's the guy that if an injury occurs ahead of them and they're thrust into a role where they're getting 30 minutes, then they become fantasy relevant? Is there someone on this team that really stands out to you that you're keeping an eye on if someone goes down?
Well, I think either one of the centres, one of the three centres that we've discussed might be worthwhile, or maybe Jeremy Evans.
Yeah, I think Evans is a real interesting guy because, as I said, whenever he got minutes in Utah, he was able to put up basically a double-double each night. He's a guy, he gets really good steal numbers as well as a big man.
Yeah.
Superb percentage, he's a really high field goal. He could lead this team in field goal percentage. And he's been a guy who gets, I'm just going to look at his career numbers, but okay, so his last five seasons, all right, last season he was at 55% from the field, 53, and then 61, 64, 66 from the field. Like, they're big numbers. He shot 83% from the free throw line last year. Yeah, per 36 minutes, he was at 1.5 steals, 1.5 blocks, and he's basically been at that sort of level his whole career, which is pretty good. If you're getting 32 minutes or 30 minutes and you're putting up 12 points, 9 rebounds, 1.5 steals, 1.5 blocks with two good percentages, that becomes he becomes valuable. Do you think that if Dirk was to go down, that he would get the minutes, or if Dwight Powell would get the minutes?
I think Aaron Evans is probably a better player, but he's a slightly different type of player. So whether they would just plug in Powell, who, as you said, does a similar thing to Dirk, not as well, obviously. I'd give it to Evans, I think.
You know what?
I think he's a better player.
The other thing that you have as well is that Zaza can also sort of be a distance shooter. He's not a three-point shooter, but he can hit mid-range shots.
Yeah, he does. He does. But I think, as strange as it sounds, Zaza is a center, even though, as you said, he hits mid-range shots. I don't think he's... It would be a very ungainly front line with him and Gallenberg or McGee.
Yeah, but I'm saying that if, say, Dirk got injured and they went with Evans, they on offense, they could put Evans a little bit closer to the basket, move Petrulia out, and have Evans as a pick-and-roll type guy, a guy with dunks and layups, Petrulia moving out, distributing from the high post, from the elbow, hitting some of those shots, working off each other a bit better. Putting Petrulia and Dallenberg, it's not ideal. Putting Evans and Dallenberg probably wouldn't work great either, but I think Petrulia gives him a bit more flexibility to move with Evans on a hot night or move with Power. The guy, obviously, I have at that is Dwight Power, who I mentioned earlier. I think that he's only young. He's only heading into his second season as well, so I think that there's a bit with him. He's a second-round draft choice from last season. I really do think that he took a big step this summer, and he's a guy that I'm definitely keeping intent eyes on. But Jeremy Evans has been a favourite of mine for a number of years from that situation where I just wanted him to get minutes, because you've seen what he can do when he gets minutes. It's just, there's just something holding him back, and I don't know what that is, but something is holding him back from ever getting a decent role. Who else haven't we talked about on this team?
What's that?
Who else haven't we talked about? No, what about your mate, JJ Barea?
JJ Barea is a bit like Devin Harris in that good basketball player, bit inconsistent in what you get from him. His role is to be the spark plug off the bench. So depending on game situation, how much time does he get? What are they actually wanting to do in the game situation? Yeah, you can't bank on him to do anything. What I reckon he said every year, he'll have two good games in a row, so I'm going to pick him up and drop him after a game, because he just does completely different things each game.
Now, the thing with Barea is, though, I think that he's probably going to be the best assist guy on this team if Williams goes down. So if he's forced, and if Williams goes down, he'll move in and be the starting point guard, and he can be a guy that goes out and gets 7 assists a game and gets 6 assists a game for a short amount of time.
I disagree with it. Okay. If Williams goes down, Devin Harris is point guard, I think.
I think it depends on what's happening with Wes Matthews.
Oh, well, yeah, okay.
It depends where they need to put Harris. Last year we saw when Rondo was out that Barea would jump ahead of Harris and he'd become the starting point guard, and Harris would stay in that sixth man role. So that's where I think that Barea's not going to have long-term value, because he'd go from 30 minutes and then he'd go back down to 12 minutes or something along those lines. But I think that he would be the guy that you'd want to add short-term, because I think that he would leap over Harris and become that starter as they keep Harris in that sixth man role and as Ray Felton stays in his suit on the bench.
Oh, God, if he ever gets minutes.
He started a playoff game, didn't he, last season?
I'm pretty sure he did.
I'm pretty sure he started at least one playoff game. I hope he did. I need to find that out. I'm sure he did. If anyone is watching this live, please let us know while I'm looking this up if you remember Ray Felton starting.
I think he must have. Has he threatened the staff or something? Is that how he's still on? He hasn't been cut yet.
It's
Harris is still on their roster.
He probably pulled a gun on them.
Yeah, well, we know he's done that before.
Exactly. Let's have a look at these playoff stats. Right. I'm bringing them up now. Where are we? Raymond Felton, playoff games in 2014-15. He played 3 games, started 1. There you go.
Well, there you go.
Your starting point guard, Ray Felton. So he only played 3 games, but he started 1 of them. So he didn't play all the games in that series. But he was out there, so he.
Murder as well, terrible point guards. Deron Williams into Ray Felton.
Look, JJ Barea is not a likable character either, to be honest. He's not high on my list of guys that I enjoy watching play or enjoy just watching him do anything. He's very antagonistic. You get the sense that everybody wants to punch him in the head when they play against him. he.
I agree, but for reasons related to the way he plays, I think.
Yes. Yep. That,
yeah. Look, I don't mind.
Darren Williams is more reasons of just off the court, just being a bad guy, not a bad criminal guy, just a shit guy, basically. But yeah, it's not a great selection of point guards from a likability standpoint. Anyway, the other guy we talked about, Charlie Villanueva, briefly, and that's about all we need to touch on with Charlie Villanueva. Is anyone else we really need to touch on? I think we might have covered everyone on this team.
No, we've got most of them. Their roster currently is sitting at about 4,000 people, though.
So there is a lot. There is a lot of guys. I've got 22 guys on my list here.
Yeah,
and
seriously, how many of those, like, there's a guy called Jared Famous.
Yep, Jared Famous. There's a guy called Salah Mergel, and I defy anyone to tell me anything about Salah Mergel. Bernard James is back there. Jamil Wilson, Brandon Ashley, Jared Famous. All right, he played all right for the Wizards in summer league. A big aggressive rebounder, but most of these guys aren't going to make the cut. If I'm picking any of these sort of random players to make it, it's Maurice Ndour. He was the most impressive guy that I saw, but there is a lot of guys on their camp roster.
Yeah. Just looking at their roster now, their second round pick, the rookie out of India.
Yeah, Satnam Singh.
He's not actually on the roster.
No, he hasn't signed. He hasn't signed yet. There you go. No, they might sign him, but they haven't. I assume that he'll go straight to the D League. And for a guy who's apparently 19 years old, he looks like he's close to retirement age. He's that's Greg Oden-esque when you see that guy. There is no way that he is 19. Like, no offense to the guy, but he would have no problem getting into a bar in Dallas.
Yeah. Okay.
There is no chance that he's 19. Now on to the next part. Who is your favorite player on this team? If it's not Dirk, which I'm sure it is.
No, really. So there's not a lot of questions. It is Dirk. Least favorite is probably more interesting. It's a toss up. It's a three way tie. And it's a three way tie between Deron, Fat Face Ray, and Charlie Villanueva.
Yeah, Villanueva's not a real nice bloke either. Not a real likable character. There's a few not likable characters on the team, but Williams has to be the least favorite. He's just insipid. Look, what's that haircut?
Fat Face Ray's.
Really? I don't mind him.
At least can play.
That's true. That's one. Look, you can bag some of his play, but he's still a starting NBA caliber point guard.
Although it's a bit of a double edged sword, because the more he plays, the more you have to put up with him.
That's true.
So maybe he becomes less likable because he's on TV more.
Yeah, that's true. It's an interesting point of view. But Dirk is clear.
It's real. I reckon if you went down the 30 teams, that's the best three-headed monster of unlikable players. I don't think anyone can come close to that.
No, I'd agree with that. I'd like to hear some listeners' feedback on that, if they think that there is any unlikable trio in any other teams that come close to Dallas' three. But Williams is, to me, Dwight Howard's pretty unlikable, but I don't know if Houston has two other guys.
If they signed Carlos Boozer, they'd have it all line up.
Yeah, well, Booz is still around. He hasn't signed anywhere, so there is a possibility that he does end in Dallas, and that's the sort of move that Dallas would make, to be honest. I could see them signing Boozer and just adding to that.
Two on brown hair with Darren.
Is Darren's hair spray on? What is it? What's the story with that haircut? It's
it looks exactly like Boozer's spray on hair looked.
Boozer's brown hair was disgraceful. It was disgraceful. Exactly.
I haven't seen Darren's hair sweat down his neck yet, which I think we've before.
But the Williams hair, it is just, I think it's the fact that it's, okay, sometimes you have people with a shaved head and they've got the real straight line across the front, but his head's not shaved. It's like long, but straight. There's a bit of Lloyd Christmas to it.
It's terrible. It's really bad.
Yeah, and you just add it to the Panther tattoo, and it's just everyone knows my thoughts on Darren Williams. I am not a huge fan, yet I've drafted him in about three leagues already. So I look forward to having the personal agony of rooting for him and against him at the same time. So I'm really looking forward to that. Now, your favorite all-time Mavericks player, is it anyone other than Dirk?
No, it's Dirk.
Yep. I was trying to find my guy, and I went back. I was thinking, I used to like Jamal Mashburn back in the day.
Yeah.
Jim Jackson had a really sort of odd start to his career when he held out as a first-round pick and then came in. And then, by year three, he was averaging... Jim Jackson averaged 26 points a game in his third season. That's crazy to me. Because you remember back in like when he first started and we're collecting the basketball cards and the Upper Deck cards, the Jim Jackson card, it wasn't there because he didn't sign a contract, I think. You couldn't get it in like the first series or something. Like there was something weird about his basketball card.
Okay. I don't remember. It's a very generic name.
But he, his son played in summer league as well. I don't think he got signed by anyone, which throws me off. He's got a son old enough to play. But Jim Jackson was a guy who, at some stage, you know, in those first couple of years, he averaged 16 points, 19 points, 26 points, 20 points, 16 and 16 through his first six seasons in his career, which I think would surprise a lot of people. And he was a pretty decent playmaker from a shooting guard as well. He had four seasons in his first six where he was averaging over four assists a game, which you don't get many shooting guards who average that sort of amount. But like, you can't find anyone really to beat Dirk as an all-time. Like, he's probably your favorite all-time player, though.
Finley was good.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
But no, he's no Dirk.
No Mike Uzzolino either.
No, I did enjoy Jet with the confidence getting the championship trophy tattooed on his arm. But no, in terms of all-time
factors. Dirk should be everyone's favorite Mavericks player of all time. He's, you know, he can be plenty of people's favorite NBA player of all time. He's not only is he fun to watch. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, it's fun watching a guy that big and shoot over guys and look unathletic while doing it and just destroying guys basically. You know, as they try to take him on and he's got that supreme confidence as all elite athletes do, but he's got it to a different level. It's close to sort of Larry Bird confidence, that not that real asshole prick Larry Bird confidence, but it's that supreme confidence. Like, you are not stopping me. Like, I get the ball, like it's all over. You're not stopping me. I'm hitting whatever that I want. Plus, he's a real funny guy. He's very humorous. If you ever hear him like announcing games, he's very good. You hear him on podcasts. Like, he's been on Simmons's podcast before. Like, he's just sounds like a really fun and really good guy. And you imagine he's a really good teammate, and when he won the title, everyone was so wrapped that the Mavs won the title for Dirk that he stuck around and that they did it for him, and he's got a ton of respect in the league, and I don't think there's anyone that can really deny that. I reckon we're done with the Mavericks here. You got anything you want to add about your team here?
No, I think it might be a long year. Dallas fans have been pretty spoiled with winning 50 games seemingly every year for the past dozen years or so. It's going to be tough to achieve, and I think this is going to be a long season for Dallas. The worst part about it is I think it gets worse next year.
Yeah,
I don't know how they can do much better. So, yeah, probably contending for a playoff spot, for the last playoff spot this year, but it probably gets worse next year. I don't see how they get too much better. So, yeah, enjoy while it lasts because it might get dark soon.
And this is this season could fall in a hole real quick. If we don't see Matthews to start the season for the first couple of months, if we see Parsons out for the first month, it is going to start ugly, and it is not going to get much better because we don't know how those guys are going to respond. Something happens when Dirk's 48 years old. Anything can happen at any point. You hope it doesn't, but anything could happen. And Darren Williams hasn't been a picture of health himself. There's a lot of risks on this team.
Yeah, exactly. So that's probably what I see in the future for Dallas, and it's concerning, but it's been a good ride. And you just hope they give it one last shot for Dirk, and then he can, go somewhere else maybe. No, not go somewhere else. Well, retire as a Mav, but successfully.
Let's hope so for Dirk. Jordan, thank you for joining me today. Where can everybody find you on Twitter once again?
@mad_router.
@mad_router. So make sure you follow Jordan over there, and make sure you're following me on Twitter @redrock_bball. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Audio Boom. Subscribe to the videos on YouTube. Leave me any feedback, comments, anything like that you want on any of these mediums. You can make sure you're checking out Basketball Monster. Go ahead and see all the functions over there. Your draft coming up, there's a ton of information. I've got a stack of articles going up over there. All the draft tools, projections, functionality over there. There's fantastic stuff there. And Hardwood Paroxysm, not necessarily fantasy related, but there's a lot of basketball info and articles going up there every day. Our NBA preview magazine will be out in the next couple of weeks, so make sure you get your hands on that as well. Got a couple of more podcasts coming this week. Myself and Matt Smith will be having the the Head-to-Head Punting Debate podcast. We'll also be covering some NBA news, and that'll be on Thursday. And then on Saturday night, US time, Sunday morning, Australian time, I'm going to be doing the Red Rock Roto Listener League draft. I'm going to be live broadcasting that as well. So if you want to see a 16-team Roto League draft in action, make sure you tune into that, which you can find on the YouTube page. Jordan, thank you for coming on again.
That's okay. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.